Welcome to Brutally Honest with me, Jermaine Pennant. Today's guest is Counsellor Lynn Crilly, also an author of The Hope Range, which include Hope with Depression, Hope with Anxiety, and Hope with Eating Disorders. Lynn has not only dealt with this with her patients, but she's also had to deal with it within her own family. Lynn Crilly.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. And I have, through my own experience, both personally with my daughter and my own experience, and also now professionally, I was asked by one of my clients to write my first book, which was Hope with Eating Disorders, in a more real, down-to-earth way. And I thought, oh, that's easy. I can easily write a book. Well, that was just not that easy. It took me 3 years. And I was really proud. It's been really embraced in the eating disorder world. And then having suffered depression myself, I thought I would then go on and write Hope with Depression. And then we did Hope with OCD, because my daughter has OCD. And then my last one was Hope with Anxiety, which I finished at the start of the pandemic, never dreaming that it would go on as long as it did. So we do cover some of the altercations that came out of the pandemic as well. The books are real because I don't know any long words. They have over 100 contributors, all giving their own thoughts and feelings towards each illness. And they cover all the different guises of the particular ones. Obviously, I believe that mental illness, they all take strands from each other. They're all quite entwined. And most of all, I cover all different types of therapies, both alternative and mainstream, all given by each individual therapist that I know and I trust their work. So it shows that there is more than one way to recover than the generic way.
Yeah. So what made you get into, you know, the therapy counseling side of things? Was there a trigger? Was family matters?
I never set out to do this, but I've got twins that are now 30, two girls. And Sam, at the age of 13, was diagnosed with the early stages of an eating disorder and OCD. And a lot of things went through my mind, as it does most mums. But I never dreamed that I wouldn't be able to take her somewhere and get the right help. And 3 years later, my family was falling apart and she was getting worse. And I decided to discharge her from the whole of the systems and do it myself. And with the help from our GP, who was fantastic, and the girls' school and friends and family, she then went into recovery. And someone had said to me, oh, my daughter's not getting better. Would you help her? And I've always loved kids. And my husband just said to me, why don't you try? And I said, but I'm not qualified. Anyway, I helped them and the girl's now fully recovered or in recovery. And I went and did some alternative training and I've never advertised. And people just seem to come and find me. And I just keep doing what I do. And now people travel all over. And sadly, the mental health system is overstretched, underfunded, and failing a lot of people. So they just seem to keep coming. Yeah, and nice. I keep doing what I do and I love it.
Great story.
So yes, and in the meantime I've written books, and my Sam is now she went on into recovery. She still has OCD, so I don't pretend that everything's hunky-dory in our house, because it's not. But she's written a script which we filmed in September with a friend of hers, Meg, about a day in the life of Sam with OCD, and it's being screened in May, I think. So, and it shows how real and debilitating living with OCD and indeed any mental illness can be. So, but I'm very real. I like to be, my style of counselling is different. I embrace the person rather than the illness.
Yeah, so mental health is something that's not really spoken about, especially in the men's game in football. It's like they're frightened to say, look, I've got an issue, or go and see a counsellor, or go and see a therapist, because they feel it's weak as an ego. Have you come across a lot of sports, especially young sports stars?
I think within mental health, mental ill health is being more widely spoken about, but there's still I mean, when Sam was diagnosed 15 years ago, there was a huge stigma. I felt like I'd failed as a mum, that we'd failed as a family. We didn't talk about it. And now, when we're very open, all of us, both my girls, my husband, who to this day doesn't understand it. He accepts it, but he doesn't understand it. And he's very supportive. But I think within now, I think, to be honest, there still is a stigma around supposedly talks about it. When we talk about it, often or not, someone will say, oh, yes, my daughter or my son or my dad or my, but you have to bring it out for someone to actually admit that they've still got issues. And I think for the younger, particularly in the sporting world, there is such, well, any world really these days, there is such a pressure to perform and to be the perfect version that they perceive on maybe social media and in the public eye, that often or not, behind closed doors, male or female, they're struggling with whatever. Yeah. But I think it's mental illness, sadly, is it more accepted in the female world? And I think within the males, it is harder for men. It is harder for them to actually admit that there is something wrong, because, like you've just said, they feel a failure. They feel not like a man, not like they should do. But they're more of a man if they do actually speak out and go and find help or talk to someone. But obviously, it's how they feel within them.
Yeah, so I'm seeing that the hardest battle, because I've been there myself, is admitting. It's like if you're an addict in a way, the hardest thing is you're in denial. If you're a drug abuser, if you're an alcoholic, you're in denial. No, I'm not. I don't need help. I'm all right. I'm only having a few. But so the hardest thing is try to admit that you need help. You have got an issue. And then to go and seek the best advice and having great people around you.
I think also within, there is this perception, and I think people look up, there is, I think social media, whilst it has its pluses, I do think it has huge negatives, and they do feel pressure to be the perfect person and to show this perfect life. But I believe that once someone actually says that there is something wrong, they're 50% there to being sorting themselves out, because the admitting is the hardest part.
Yeah, you touched on social media there, and you're right. When you see social media, you see people's perfect parts, best bits. You never see someone down and posting, I'm in a ruck, I'm in a dark place. You never see anything like that. So you're always seeing people's amazing parts, and you're thinking to yourself, well, why ain't my life like that?
Yeah,
how comes I'm not happy like that every other day or every day they're posting? They just seem like they've got the perfect life. But these people, probably most darkest people who've got the most issues, but never post a dark part. So it's like a false pretend on social media, which people strive to be, but you know, it's not something that you can do easy.
But also, it's not just, it is for them, but the people following them think that they've got the perfect life and that's what they want. And because I predominantly work with young kids, they've all got social media, they're all following these people, then they think that they've got the perfect life, and why isn't their life like that? But I think, you know, it is about learning, and social media has its own addiction. People are addicted to social media. But no, I think within the, you know, sporting world, I think eating disorders are more prevalent than perhaps shown, anxiety, OCD, and depression, and all, they all are entwined in their own way. And I think it is hard, and particularly for the sports people, because they have such a short life in the sporting industry. What do they do when they come out?
Yeah,
all of a sudden their whole thing's gone.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. It was difficult, because obviously you're in the headlights, you're doing something that you've done since you could walk, or you've dreamt about is playing football or boxing or whatever sport it is. And then quarter of your life, 35 is the average age of retirement. So for that to stop, it's a big part of you that kind of dies and fades away. And then what do you do then? You know, it's not like me personally, it's not like I was a good academic kid at school. So I wasn't, you know, thinking, yeah, well, I could be a footballer, but I also want to do this after football. I only had one job in my mind, and that was football. And then obviously when that finishes, it's like, wow, what do you do now? Then you're just sitting at home trying to figure your next life path. You've got all the rest of your life ahead of you. So you're thinking, wow, what do I do here? And then obviously I've made a few mistakes in my career, and trying to move on from that and get, you know, work, it's become difficult. So then you go into a dark place, you start feeling sorry for yourself, and you know, that's when the depression starts to kick in.
I have to say, in your defence, I think you're lovely, and I think you've got a really good attitude.
Thank you, Lynn.
I don't know what you were like before. I did do my research.
Well, I'm grown up.
You had a colourful life. But, you know, you're trying to do something, you're trying to turn it around now and do some good. And if you can inspire some of the young kids that need inspiring and perhaps make the sporting industry more real, then, you know, show it for what it is rather than what they dream that it is, then you might help some of the young kids.
Yes, because, you know,
be a role model for them, because you're open and honest about your past. I mean, we've all got a past. But you're trying to show now that, I don't know, I think what you're doing is really good.
Yeah, but I feel for the youngsters coming through now, it's very daunting, because they're just thrown into the spotlights. They're getting, you know, a shitload of cash.
Also, people with social media, that they're, because there's these keyboard warriors, they're criticised. And, you know, that takes a lot of beating their self-esteem constantly. So, you know, whether they're being, however, people just aren't kind. People need to be kind.
Yeah, I know getting stick is part and parcel of football or sports. You know, you always got the fans and people negative. But there's come a time where it starts to creep in, you know, when it's constant.
Yeah.
It starts to... you know, start eating away at you and does affect you at points, like little remarks you look and you see, okay, I let it slide. But when it's constant, it does play a big part on your mind, and then that can start affecting your performances. And then when your performance starts slipping, you then go home and you're thinking, why am I playing not so good? You can't find the answers. And then you can just get yourself in a big snowball effect and start deteriorating like quickly.
So that in itself can be a negative spiral for someone, or they might think that, you know, that's how maybe eating disorders and OCD can develop. But I do believe, from what I've learned personally, both personally and professionally, that some people are more prone. People are always trying to find a reason why they've got a mental illness. Often or not, there isn't one. It's a culmination of different things that have come together. And that's how that person is coping with, you know, whether they've got an eating disorder, depression or anxiety or OCD, it is a coping mechanism for how they're feeling. But it is, like you say, it's admitting, which is hard for anyone, whether you're male or female. But it is admitting and seeking the right help. And you don't have to go mainstream. There's lots of different types of help now. There's lots of alternative therapies that help, you know, as well as the mainstream ones. And it's just finding a therapist or someone that you trust. There has to be a mutual trust in the relationship to help you work out, you know, what you want from it.
Yeah, I think what I would like to see now, you know, the mental health awareness is more out there now. It's clubs having someone in the infrastructure. Yes, someone at the club, rather than you just go training, you've got the weight on your shoulders, you finish training, you go home, and then the weight on your shoulders even more. And then it just, you know, where if you go training, when they go every day, you can then afterwards sit down and go, listen, you know, I'm not feeling great, my head space is not there. And you know, because that's where you are every day. You're there every day of the week. So, you know, someone being there, I think should you know, benefit players.
Not, because obviously there's this huge push for mental health first aiders in the workplace and in school and places like that, and they are pushing, you know, a lot of big companies are doing mental health days and things like that. So mental health or mental ill health is becoming more accepted in the workplace. Do they not have that in the clubs? I would have thought they would have done that.
No, that's not definitely when I wasn't playing, but I think if I'm correct, that Liverpool Football Club are the first team to actually do that.
Really
but yeah, but it definitely, I feel it definitely would have helped in my playing day, just to, you know, go in and say what's on my mind and some of the things that are eating away at me and the stuff that I've kept locked in throughout my childhood, throughout my young adult life, and then in my older adult life that I've kept locked away that I've never really expressed or got out there, which definitely affected me with my decisions. It would have been great for me personally to go and sit down and speak to someone and get a lot off my chest and understand why I did certain things and decisions making. So it would have been great. But hopefully, yeah, clubs can more do that.
And maybe the younger clubs also, like the what I found as well is the football, you know, the small kids, the small clubs, or the recreational ones where all the kids go, it's good because as they're growing up, you know, sometimes they don't get picked for a team or they're not the first team or they don't get played. If they've got low self-esteem already, which sadly a lot of the young kids of today do seem to have, if they're not, so it would be good. It would be good for everywhere to have someone that they could go and talk to, because otherwise it all part, like you've just said, it piles up in your head. So your head was continually full that you couldn't think straight. So it sort of made you make some bad decisions. Whereas if you've been able to go and disassociate yourself from what you were thinking or unload, then you would have had a clearer headspace to make better decisions.
And like you said, when I was younger, I got, I didn't get picked for Nottingham Forest and England Under Schoolboys. And it kind of sucked. But a kid that I knew I was good, so I knew I was going to play on. But a child that probably hasn't got that self-esteem, that confidence, that really could have, you know, knocked him down a peg or two. And then, because when you're that age, you're like, all right, I don't want to play football anymore. And I want to go do something else, because you don't want that rejection again. So yeah, that is something I've actually just realized now you're saying that how much, you know, a little child getting rejected could affect him going forward,
or not played, or, you know, or they didn't play. It's all about I've seen it within some young boys that I've worked with, how, you know, it wasn't just football. One of them was with a cricket team and he didn't get picked. And I think because his self-esteem was on the floor anyway, it just added to it. And I think it, you know, they have to, obviously they're not always going to be picked, so they have to build resilience. Yeah. No resilience. And also you have to pick yourself up, dust yourself down and try again.
Yeah. That's what I did. But I always knew that I was good enough to play. I should have been picked, but my mistakes were probably the guidance from my younger life, which my attitude, my professionalism wasn't, you know, the best as the other children were. But again, that's from my childhood, the way I got brought up, and having no guidance and not understanding really, you know, the rights and wrongs, just being a lad where, you know.
And to be fair to you now, that's made you into who you are now, which is why you're doing what you're doing now, to help others.
Yeah, I, you know, whoever's listening, whoever's in kind of the same situation, difficult times and a rough childhood, broken home, that they're not alone, that there is people out there who they can speak to and express certain things that will definitely help them on the straight and narrow if they feel they need it.
Also, it's them being able to access that help. You know, so they're getting the right help isn't always easy because of, I don't know, the lack of funding out there, the GPs are overrun. You know, it is finding that help and knowing where to go to get that help. But first of all, I would always say, talk to an adult or someone or a friend or whoever that you trust and then work it out with them. But don't just stay on your own worrying about it, because there is always someone, if you're at school, a teacher, or go to someone, or in a workplace, there is always someone that you can go to.
Yeah, that
silence.
Yeah, that was my problem, really. My main problem is that I didn't acknowledge, I didn't want to believe it. I probably, it's only the last 5-6 years really where I've really admitted that, you know, the child have really affected me and the mistakes I made and my decisions I made. So if I would have kind of looked deeper and say, I've got problems, I've got issues, mental issues, I need to go and see someone or speak to someone or just speak about what's upsetting me, what the void that's inside me. I'd have had a...
Do you look back with resentment to your childhood now, or do you, you know, because, or do you sort of, are you okay, you've left it in the past now and you're doing what you're, yes, you did make, I don't know, you might have made bad decisions or whatever, or you weren't guided properly, but you still have turned out a good person?
Yeah, no, I don't. With resentment, I call it, it's, you know, memories. It's, I don't have regrets because it's me, and I'm very grateful for what my father tried to give me, and you know, I got where I really got to being a professional footballer, which is every boy's dream. But I just wish that I spoke more and not be ashamed of my upbringing. That's, I think, that was a big thing with me.
Yeah,
that was the big thing with me, of being around people who, I've got a nice family, solid family, and then I was like ashamed of mine. So I would hide from that. Oh. I'll pretend everything's okay. I'll pretend everything's okay.
Point. But then I have to say that some people in privileged backgrounds aren't happy, or they still take bad paths or make bad decisions.
Yeah.
Just really good point. Never be ashamed of who you are. Embrace who you are.
Yeah, if you're privileged, you can have different issues going on in your life, which can, you know, but obviously my one were, you know, being ashamed because I couldn't have this and, you know, it was rough. I didn't have a nice house. So a lot of things then played into part. And then when I left and I came, I didn't really want to go back to that environment anymore. So I kind of distanced myself off from my family. So not being, having a mum around, my mother wasn't around when I was growing up. I kind of distanced myself from my father as well. So then I was kind of alone for a lot of my young years, adult life as well. And then never really speaking about it, and I had a lot of weight on my shoulders. But, you know, I wish now.
Did you want to speak about it, but was just the, you just didn't know how to go about sorting it out?
Yeah, I didn't know how. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know who to go to. And I just put on, more or less put on a front that, because I was always Jack the Lad, I was funny, like to giggle. But I never really got on top of my issues and my underlying issues that have always been there. I never really addressed them until later on in my life and realised so. And that's why I'm doing this, you know, podcast. So for listeners who are in the same situation, same upbringing, they know they're not alone. I've been there, and there is a way out if you, you know, kind of get it early.
Because the youth clubs and all of that have gone now, haven't they? So there's nowhere for them to go, which I think is really sad. You know, they used to be youth clubs all the time.
Yeah.
A lot of kids used to go to there and would feel home there, or there would be someone there that they could trust, that they could talk to.
Yeah, that is sad, because Akram, I used to go to, it was called Meadow Boys, and we always used to go there about 5 o'clock till about 8. And it was great time. You'd play football in the gymnasium part, then you'd table tennis in the other area. There'll be girls playing in the cafeteria, you know, talking all sorts, running around. It was just such a good place and homey place. but now the kids, that's taken away. And what do they do? You know, where do they go? They just play on the streets or on social media. It's not healthy anymore.
No, or they play on those games. They lose themselves and they get, So, no, I think that's really sad that they've taken the youth clubs away, because there is nowhere for the kids to go.
No, there's no story. And that's when, you know, all this crime comes about. And, you know, especially, again, you know, you see a lot of broken homes and troubled childhoods that they tend to end themselves in prison. And it's just, yeah, definitely needs more to be done.
Well, maybe that's something that we could work on, because they're definitely, because I think by taking them, you're taking away their dreams, that they almost feel like there's no point.
Yeah. And in saying that is, in this industry as well, I've been knocked back so many times because of my past, my colourful past, my mistakes. You know, I've tried to go on shows and they've knocked me back. Producer said no, he's not reliable. And it does take a whack out of you. It's think, why am I bothering? Mm-hmm. Why am I, you know, waking up and trying to do this and put this in place if they're just going to constantly say no to me when I know I'm good enough for whatever they're producing, for whatever show they've got on. It's when you make a mistake, the world doesn't let you fix it. It doesn't let you move past that.
No.
You know, it wants to judge you on that. So people who've made mistakes are thinking, what am I going to do right now? Because all that's going to happen is I'm going to get knocked back because of my past.
So where's that left on a counselling point? Where's that left you then?
It's a good question.
Honestly.
I'm all for counselling. I've learned a lot about myself over the last, 5 years. So I understand a lot more. I'm in a better place than when I was playing football, put it that way, mentally and health-wise. So now I'm just, you know, I want to probably, you know, tie up the few rough ends and make sure that the past doesn't come up and repeat itself. So that's my take on counselling. So, you know, I'm not shy from it. I'm definitely interested in it for sure. Because I always want to do is better myself. And if I can better myself and help others, then I'm all for it.
And then hopefully other people that are listening to this will perhaps listen to what you're saying and embrace it themselves if they feel the need to, or they feel that it would benefit. I mean, all of us would benefit from talking to someone. Everyone, because everyone's got stuff going on, particularly, you know, post-pandemic, more now and all what's going on in the world than ever. I feel that the stress levels outside are high, or really high, with everything that's going on. So I think, like you're saying, you know, particularly in your field, which is obviously predominantly probably the listeners will be footballers or wannabe footballers or those trying to get into the industry, you know, if you do, we would all benefit from talking to someone. And if you think that that will help you become a stronger player, stronger minded, because you can be physically strong, but you can be weak mentally, but your body and your mind have to be in sync for you to be at the best version of you. So, you know, maybe we should promote that people find someone to talk to or empower them to believe in themselves.
Yeah, 100%. I feel, you know, if you've got any doubts, any issues, any underlying issues, if you're seeing patterns that keep, you know, coming around, that I keep on doing this, I keep on making this mistake, then, you know, it's probably there's a root in there somewhere that's leading to that path. So go and speak to someone if you're feeling sad, feeling down. I think speaking is so vital. I think getting things off your chest that's holding you down or weighing you down, and that's off, and you're not ashamed anymore of you know, I feel vulnerable, this, that, it goes a long way. It's absolutely huge.
I think also sometimes it can build up in your head to be bigger than what it actually is. And when you talk to someone, you realise that it's not, because you build it up in your head and it becomes like this enormous mountain. When, you know, in reality, once you start talking about it, the mountain begins to crumble and you realise that it's not as perhaps heavy or as big as you thought it was. Or by just offloading it, sometimes just helps people to feel better and it clears their mind so they can think straighter again. And accept. I think you have to accept, because you can't change the past. You have to accept it and move on. Work with now and move on. And I think sometimes a lot of people, it takes time, you know, myself included, to accept things that have gone on. Because like you said, you look at other people and their families and, you know, everything looks greener on the other side of the fence, but often or not, it's not. But, you know, it's about accepting your own life. Because like when we spoke last night, you know, people say to me, I just want to be happy. But what is happy?
Yeah.
What is happy? And it's about inner peace and accepting where you are now and just rather than always looking for the next thing.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. That is the main question. What is happiness? You know, is it money? But then people who have got money, sometimes they aren't happy. Because, like we said last night, I was at Liverpool, my dream move. I've always wanted to go there. I had a nice contract, a nice house, and I still wasn't happy. You know, was that because I wasn't playing as much as I wanted to play? But, you know, that was down to my actions that I wasn't playing enough because I wasn't training hard enough. Happiness is exactly, it's inner peace. It's when you feel right. And I think that's the main thing. I don't think money is going to make happy. House, cars, that's still materialistic.
No.
That's not, that's not going to make you happy. It can offload pressure. It can help with certain situations, but be on end though, it's not gonna be happiness.
No, and I couldn't agree, because I've just sort of been thinking about that quite a lot recently, because some of the kids that I'm working with, you know, they say, oh, you know, I want this, and I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna do that. And I said, well, and then I'll be happy. But will you? No, because then you'll get there and you'll want something else.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Is what is happy. I mean, I know it sounds really boring, but I like doing jigsaw puzzles. And I like nothing more than sitting outside in the sun in our garden doing my jigsaw puzzle with my grandchildren and my husband and my two girls.
That's
happy, not having to go, you know, that is my ideal of perfect.
Yeah, so you've got to find the balance. Obviously, you know, you're working, making money. That's costing to pay the bills, to put a roof over your family's head. Yeah, we understand that. But then also you've got to find that balance, what makes you happy. Once you've got that, then you find what makes you happy. Materialistic.
Yeah, I mean, so I think also, and it's about accepting. I was looking at some quotes this morning to put up on Instagram, and I thought it's about accepting. Now everyone's on this conveyor belt and we're just not get on this treadmill and we're just not getting off. They get to one thing and they want the next thing and the next thing, you know, and I've been guilty of that. We've all been, you know, I'm sure we've all been guilty. You know, you get a nice car, then suddenly that's not enough. You want the next car, you know, you want a bigger house, then you want a house down the coast, or, and it goes on and on and on. You know, the kids, they get their trainers and then they're not new anymore. So they want the next pair. No, we need to accept where we are now to be happy. Otherwise, you know, we're all just, I don't know, living this fast life. And I don't think our brains are programmed to keep up with with technology. Technology is going way too fast now.
I've gone past that materialistic thing, because I was at one stage where when I was playing, I was in an apartment and I thought, this is too small. Want a bigger place, so I got a bigger place with a swimming pool, a tennis court. Then, you know,
did that make you happy?
Not really, no, because I was still making the same mistakes, trying to fulfill that happiness. What made me happy? The void that I was inside. Now I'm in a place where I couldn't care less if I'm in a one bedroom apartment. I couldn't care less if I'm in a five bedroom mansion. I've established that doesn't make me happy. You know, if I'm in a two bed flat. And I'm happy with myself. This is brilliant. I can live it for the rest of my life. Yeah. So I'm, you know, now I established that. Obviously, I'm not earning as what I was in football, but still, that's not. I could earn minimal, but working on Talk Sport Radio or for Sky or on TV, that will make me happy. Then, yeah, it's all about finding what makes you happy now.
Yeah, and accepting that.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
So. You know, maybe that's what, I don't know, maybe that's what everyone should, I don't know. I think the whole mental health world is huge at the moment. And I think Sorry, I wanted to say, like, post-pandemic. When we went into the pandemic, I knew that the financial and mental ill health implications from the pandemic would far outweigh the actual pandemic themselves. And now we're seeing, you know, I mean, I don't advertise anywhere, and I'm contacted on a daily basis by parents from all over the country whose kids have got, you know, sadly suffering from an eating disorder or depression or anxiety or OCD, and they just can't access the right help, or they've accessed help, but it's not enough. And more needs to be done now to raise awareness, but rather than just raise awareness, actually do something about it. More money go into the system to be able to support people so that they can find their happy eventually.
Yeah,
and it doesn't just affect the other thing, actually, the mental illness people that suffer, it doesn't just affect the person suffering, it has a huge effect on the people around them. So, you know, if a child or a young person suffering from an eating disorder, anxiety, the effect on the rest of the family is enormous.
Yeah, so, I can imagine.
And then, you know, if whether someone's suffering from depression because they've lost their job or it's generic or whatever, then the it isn't just the person themselves that needs the support, it's the people around them. And that's what some of the workplaces, I think, are trying. They have to be more aware that if someone's husband or wife or child then is suffering, then they have to go to appointments or this and that, or they might need more time out. But it isn't just the people suffering, it's the people around them as well.
Yeah. Did you find when you was dealing with your daughter, did you find it took a big impact on your life, on work and why not?
Huge. Yeah. I mean, we're very open about it. I mean, me and my husband at one point, because he didn't understand mental illness, I actually asked him to leave because he just wasn't helping. Because my main focus was, and obviously there wasn't just Sam, there was Charlotte, her twin sister as well, who had been sidelined. He didn't leave, thankfully, and then he made more of an effort to. He's fantastic. He's my rock now. But, you know, there was Charlotte as well, and it affected our social life. I mean, even now, we don't, you know, because it went on and on and on, we didn't go out. I didn't feel like I wanted, neither of us felt like we wanted to go out. We had we've got a scaffold business that we were trying to run as well. And, you know, you don't want to go out and listen to how wonderful everyone else's kids are doing when your child's sitting at home starving themselves. No, it was, I think that was then when my depression came in, was probably once Sam had got onto was in recovery. But even now, it's affected. We haven't got the huge social life that a lot of our friends have got because we didn't build it up over the time. No, it affected our life in every which way. It was miserable.
And did you feel you wanted to address that yourself rather than get help elsewhere? Was the help not good enough, or did you feel that you could do a better job, or you understood it better?
Well, for my daughter?
Yes.
I think, no, we went... At the beginning, we spent 3 years privately and then within the NHS, and you know, it just was not working. Sam was losing, we were losing her, and Charlotte had become very angry with it all, and me and my husband were arguing, and I just thought, you know, our once happy family unit had fallen apart. It wasn't falling apart, it'd fallen apart. And then I sat, all four of us sat down, and I remember saying, right, we're not doing this anymore, we're going to do it ourselves, you know. And thankfully, and it's not easy, and in my books, you know, both the girls talk openly, and Kevin talked openly about how we felt, and we're very open now. Charlotte is very, she campaigns for siblings, because often or not, siblings get sidelined, but thankfully, we are really, really, it's come good. Really good.
Oh, amazing.
My girls are really, amazing. Really, yeah, they're really close. And my Charlotte's just had twins. So I've got a baby grandson and a baby granddaughter. And they're 8.
Oh, brilliant.
So, and brilliant. It's just made our family, we're not perfect, so it isn't perfect, but it's come good. I mean, Sam still has OCD, as you'll see in the film when it comes out. But we laugh, she can laugh about it. She's still tormented on a daily basis, but she gets herself up, dusts herself down and gets on with it. And she works with me now with some of my clients, and we make a good, she does personal training with them, and we make good, yeah, it's come good, but it was crap for many years. Okay. And within my work, I see, you know, often or not, the mums will cry or the dads will cry in my office. But because I've been there, I know how awful it was.
Yeah, yeah. And when is the, what is the film called first, and when's it coming out?
The film is called, it's a short film, it's called A Day with OCD. It gives a light-hearted but very sensitive view on living with OCD. It's, I think it's being premiered in London on the 9th of May, and then it's been entered for some film awards.
Oh, so that's then, that soon.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. So then we'll see what comes from that. But it was good for her. She loses herself. She writes poetry. She's got a book called Hope Through Poetry. I just thought I'd plug that. And she loses herself through writing. Okay. So her writing is her way of releasing her demons, if you like.
And her
writing is very powerful. But no, we're very honest. We haven't got the perfect family at all. We still, you know, Sam still has OCD. And but we all work together now.
Okay, brilliant.
And we also promote that, you know, hope, there is hope, rather than just think that it's all over.
Well, Lynn, it's great to finish on an absolute smashing note. I know everyone's listening enjoyed this podcast today. So listen, thank you so much for coming on, Lynn. It's been an absolute pleasure having you and talking to you and sharing some of my stories and hearing your views and your stories as well. Fantastic.
No, thank you. And it's been a pleasure. And you're lovely. Yep. So carry on doing what you're doing.
I try my best, Lynn. I try my best. Okay, take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Bye.
So that's a wrap. That's all from me from this week. Massive thank you to my guest, Lynn Crilly, on sharing her story on OCD. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I certainly did. So for now, see you next week. Take care.